All right, well, let's go ahead and get started. If you would turn to Deuteronomy chapter 10, we're going to be looking at chapter 10 and 11 tonight, which I think are the best chapters so far in the book of Deuteronomy. But I always tend to think whatever I just studied is like the most amazing, amazing thing. But these are really good chapters. It is basically summarizing what God wants from the whole law. A lot of parallels from chapter 6. Let's see what I put up there. Let's see. Oh, helps if I put this. There we go. So, kind of a bookending chapter here. So, 6 through 11 all really go together. Chapter 6, the first part of that, remember, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, teach your children, be diligent in doing those things. So, a lot of those things we'll see in chapters 10 and 11. But in the middle, we had those four dangers. When you go into the land, these are some things that you need to be checking on yourself for. And then we end with kind of the foundations, again, that we started with in chapter 6. So just as a reminder of where we've been the past few weeks, is the idea of all of these dangers. And a lot of these times that we see in these chapters is don't say in your heart. And that's kind of the phrase that we saw kind of several times in that. And chapters 8 and 9 really deal with the idea of pride. First of all, chapter 8, don't say in your heart it's by my strength, right? That I've been able to take care of these giants and win all these battles. Don't think that way. It's because of the Lord. He's the one that drove them out. And then chapter 9, look at verse 4, and what might they struggle with? Also prideful thinking. Chapter 9, verse 4, it's because of my righteousness. It's because I'm so righteous. Okay, well, maybe it's not because of my strength. I can kind of physically see I'm not as strong as those giants. But because I'm so righteous. I'm more righteous than they are, so I deserve this land. And so I connected chapters 8 and 9 and kind of ended with chapter 9, but I tweak that today, where chapter 10, kind of the first part of chapter 10, is really the end of that section. So kind of starting in chapter 8 all the way through 10 verse 11, Moses kind of wraps up those dangers. So that's kind of where we've been. So we'll look at the first part of chapter 10 here in a little bit. So kind of wrapping up chapter 9 by way of review, so it's not because of you're so righteous, and then he spends a good chapter humbling them. And you remember, what does he do to humble them? What does he keep repeating? If you remember from last week, sorry. Yes, yeah. So reminding them of their past, how they were slaves. And what else does he keep doing? Reminding them of in their history. Yeah, they keep provoking God to anger. It's not because you're righteous that you're getting where you are. You're the stubbornmost people around. And how long were they stubborn starting in Egypt? They never stopped, right? It says they were stubborn from Mount Horeb. And then he recounts the golden calf. I don't know if I... Anyways. So just again and again, he uses just about every synonym for sin there is in repeating their history. It's not because you're so righteous that God is doing this for you. So why is the reason? Why is God delivering them and giving them this land? Exactly. It's not because you're so mighty. It's not because you're so righteous. It's because God loves you. And that's amazing, because you're so stubborn and you constantly provoke him to anger to the point where he wants to destroy you. And so remember, the end of chapter 9 is Moses' prayer to God. It's kind of intermission or intercessory prayer to God, saying, please don't wipe them out, because then what will the nations think of you if they all die in the wilderness? They say, well, this God's not able to deliver them in the wilderness. So because of your name, please, please save these people. So that's what God does. So looking at the first part of chapter 10, verses 1 through 11, verses 1 through 5, God reestablishes the covenant with Israel. So I'm assuming that you have read these chapters, so I will not take the time to do that, although that'd be just fine to do. But I won't take the time, because there's so much good stuff to talk about. So verses 1 through 5 of chapter 10, God tells Moses, I want you to cut out two new stone tablets because you broke the first one. So what is the point in God instructing Moses to do that? Is it because, well, I'd really rather not broken tablets be in the ark? I'd like new ones that aren't broken. Is that the idea? Or maybe it's another idea. why would God have him make another set? Any thoughts on that?
Reestablishing the covenant.
Okay. Man. It's like, how did you know that? Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm gonna. Okay, so yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. He is reestablishing the covenant with them. What did Israel just get through doing? What's the timeline? What's the history of what just happened? Okay, so they're on Mount Sinai. God descends. God speaks to them, and you remember their reaction? Yeah, Moses, you talk to them, and what did they agree to? Yes. Yeah, everything that God says, we will do. And yeah, we're in, just you talk to him or unless we die. And God says, great, I put the fear of me in them. And 40 days passes, and within those 40 days, they decide to make a golden calf and claim, this is the God who brought us out of Egypt. So they immediately break the covenant before the covenant is given to Moses. So the reestablishing of the covenant, what does that say about God? Whew. Isn't that amazing? That should be just amazing to us. That here God led them out of Egypt with a mighty hand, the plagues, the Red Sea, brought them to this mountain, scared them half to death, speaking to them, loving them, and then they immediately forsake him and serve an idol. And then because of Moses saying, don't kill him, okay, I'll reestablish the covenant. And that's more powerfully spoken, I believe, in verses 10 and 11. So verses 1 through 5, it's amazing that God would forgive them. And then Moses kind of points out, kind of a parentheses section, if you will, 6 through 9. This is where they went. This is their journeys. Aaron died, and so his son Eleazar is now the high priest. The Levites are not allowed to have a territory in the land. They're given cities. And then look at verses 10 and 11. What does he say about God in verse 10? What sticks out to you in verse 10?
He listened to me.
Yeah, so that is amazing part, that the Lord listened to Moses and granted Moses' request when God said, I'm going to wipe him out and start over with you and make you a better, mightier nation than what I have presently. The latter part of verse 10 is amazing to me, where it says that God was unwilling to destroy you. Again, remember, this section started in chapter 9. Really, the first part of verse 9, but really verse 4, don't say in your heart it's because you're so righteous. You're alive today because of how wonderful and great, forgiving, merciful God is. He was unwilling to destroy you. And then look at verse 11. What is amazing about that verse? That kind of emphasizes God's mercy. Yeah. Go, arise, go on your journey, so that you may go in and possess the land. What is it going to take for them to possess the land? Who is going to do all the work in that? Yeah. So it's amazing to me, in these chapters, Moses is really emphasizing the character of God, who God is. And if you understand that, that's going to be the motivation to serve him, to obey all of the law, to keep his commandments, to be careful to do them. So the idea is, God says, even though you messed up mightily, I'm willing to forgive you. Now go in, possess the land, I'll drive them out, I'll do all the hard work, you just obey me. So that's amazing kind of wrap up to that section, saying it's don't you ever say it's because I'm so righteous that I get to possess this land. He kind of hammered them over the ears, saying that's just not the case. And don't you see the parallel to us as well? Right? It's not because we are so righteous or we have done so many good things that we deserve heaven or we deserve our salvation. It's all because of God's grace and mercy that he's been towards us that we get those same things. So it's very, very applicable for us. Any comments or thoughts as we wrap up kind of chapters 8 and 9? Yes, sir. Good point. Good. We didn't tweak it, water it down. He just stayed the same. Yes, sir.
It's also interesting. The character of Moses continues as it was in Egypt. He intercedes for the people over and over again. And you see this period in which Moses goes into fasting on behalf of the people. It gives us a glimpse of what we as Christians would do for those who are struggling and those who not walking God's way.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. Any other thoughts? We've got a lot to cover, so I may go ahead.
Okay. It's interesting how Aaron is the priest, but Moses acts like a priest.
Sure.
There's a lot everywhere about that. But
yes. Yeah.
It's
good.
Really
good.
Like.
Sure. Good point. And how Jesus is the new Moses, who is the great high priest, and all those wonderful things. All right, so here we're getting in, again, the more you study, the more you just are amazed at what is there. And chapters 10 and 11, just a very powerful, powerful section here in Deuteronomy. So starting in chapter 10, looking at verse 12, Moses is basically going to summarize in general terms what they need to do with the law. They need to love it, obey, be careful to obey, all those things. And then starting in chapter 12, he's going to get with the more specifics. Now let's dive into some of the details. But before he does that, he gives us these wonderful two chapters kind of summarizing this is what it means to love the law. So in verses 10, or excuse me, that should be a colon there, 10, 12 through 25, is basically he's going to do three waves of this is what I want you to do, and this is why you do it. And so he's constantly telling this is what you need to do, you need to obey, and this is why you should obey. So those are some things to look for. So look at verses 12 to 15 in this section. I love verse 12 and 13. And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you? And this is five things. Fear the Lord your God, walk in all his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and number five, to keep the commandments and statutes of the Lord, which I'm commanding you today for your good. It kind of throws that latter part that we looked at last week, for your good. These laws are going to benefit them if they do them. And so, love the Lord with all your heart. Be careful to do his commands. So Moses gives them really five things. This is what is required of you. And any one of these five, anyone can do. These aren't, it takes a super Jew to be able to do all these. No, anyone can do these. It's your attitude. But do you want to do it? Do you really want to serve him? It starts with fear the Lord. That's interesting. Proverbs chapter 1 verse 8, the beginning of wisdom is fear of the Lord. So it starts with fear, and that's what God did on Mount Sinai. Before he gave them the law, what did he do? He put the fear of God in them so that they would. So the first one makes sense, fear the Lord. Which one is in the middle? Love. Love the Lord with all your heart and soul. That's kind of the middle of the command. That's the foundational principle, is to love the Lord. And the last, of course, is to keep the commandments. So it starts with fear, middle is love, and the last to keep the commandments. So any comments on that before we look at the why, starting in verse 14 and 15? A lot we could say. Oh, we could really spend our whole class time just on chapter 10. But look at 14 and 15, and you get the why. This is why you should do those five things. Number one, it's amazing God chose you. He says, this is what God has done. This is how mighty and powerful God is, and yet God chose you. And what does he emphasize about Israel in these verses? Yes. Yeah, it calls them stubborn. That was a bad question because I meant to ask that in the next why. So anyway, sorry. So the idea that God chose you out of all the nations of the earth, and that's amazing. God would choose them. They're stubborn Israel. That's what he's been calling them for two chapters, right? Yet God chose you anyway. So that's pretty amazing. It's amazing that God would choose us, right, to be his children. So we're in the same boat. Look at the second wave in verses 16 to 18. What do they need to do? Verse 16, they need to circumcise their heart and stop being stubborn. Now, the Jews, of course, were really big on circumcision, right? And they believed if we're circumcised, then what does that mean? We're good. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as long as we're circumcised physically, then we're God's people. No, it's a lot more to that. You need to circumcise your heart. Stop being so hard-hearted, in other words. Another version says, don't be stiff-necked. Stop being stubborn. So the idea is we need to be moldable. We don't need to be set in our ways. We need to be moldable to God's ways. Whatever God says, I'm going to change. I'm going to do whatever I need to do what God wants me to do. So that you need to be circumcised your heart. And then the reason why, or gives the motivation. It's because he is the God of all gods. He is the Lord of all lords. And what does it emphasize about God? Now, I do know that question is okay. What is emphasizing about God in these verses?
He's fair.
He's fair, yes. What else?
Great and awesome.
Great and awesome.
Can't buy him off.
Can't buy him off, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Not partial. Look at verse 18.
He's just.
Just and provides.
Okay. Who does he take care of?
Fatherless and the widow.
Takes care of those who need it the most, right? The fatherless, the widows, the sojourners. What does that tell you about God? Yes, includes everybody, loves everyone. Yeah, absolutely. Again, what I'm trying to emphasize is here we have, this is what is required of you. This is what you need to do. You need to circumcise your heart. That's followed by, this is who God is. You see how powerful that is? It gives us the motivation. Here's who God is, who gave us these rules for our good, by the way. And this is why we should serve him, because he's so loving. He takes care of the helpless. And he takes care of the sojourners. Now, why would that be helpful to remember as an Israelite? Kind of going on in the next section. They were sojourners, right? They have been sojourners basically their whole life, right, in Egypt. So don't remember that. He'll repeat that in this law. Remember when you were in Egypt, how you were sojourners. So look at that third way, 19 to 22. What you need to do is love the sojourner, fear God, serve God, hold fast to God. And so what point is he making in verses 18 and 19? 18, this is who God is. 19, be like God. Absolutely. This is who God is. Model yourselves after the perfect example.
Who's the resident alien? Who's the Gentile? Now, you go to the New Testament, and Peter comes to Cornelius' house, and he says, you know how awful it is to come to somebody's house and eat with a... You know, what scripture are you reading?
Yeah.
I never could figure that one. Yeah. It's like, you guys got really off track.
Right, yeah. And I think it's easy for us to do as well, and to think of ourselves that we're better than someone else who doesn't live here. And it's so easy to have that mentality. See ourselves as better. Other people are beneath us. We're all on the same level. We're not better than anyone else. And really helpful to remember that, keep that in mind. Notice the why in these verses. God has done great things for you. This is why you should do this. Our obedience to God depends on how we see him. We need to teach the what. This is what God requires. But what is Moses doing in this section? Not only giving them the what, but also the why. This is why you should. This is should motivate you to serve God. And I tell you, it reminded me of the book of Nahum. The book of Nahum starts with, this is a description of who God is. The rest of the book kind of keeps going back to that section of who God is. The better we understand who God is, we fall in love with God, we're going to obey him. We're going to love him, do what he says. That's very important, especially as parents. I would say not just to teach, this is what you have to do. Give them the motivation. This is why we do it. Because God was so loving and good to us. How can we but serve him? All right, lot to say there. But I'm already running out of time. But I want to give you the chance to make any comments you would like to through the end of chapter 10. Yes, ma'am.
What about by his name you shall swear?
Can't swear by anybody higher.
Maybe the idea of just putting all of your trust in God, that you're not going to swear on anything else because nothing is greater than God, would be my thought on that. Anyone else have a better answer than that? Yes, sir.
Can't tell him not to boast. All this has been done by God.
Yeah.
There's nothing above him.
Yeah. Good. Okay, look at chapter 11. It just gets better and better, in my opinion. So here he starts with, consider what God has done for you. So he starts in verse 1. This is what you need to do. You shall therefore love the Lord your God, keep his charge, his statutes, his rules, and commandments always. Not just whenever you want to. Do this. This is how you live, right? Follow the Lord. And then I want you to consider some things. This is going to help you serve him. So verses 2 through 7 really do that for us. And in verses 3 and 4, what does he want them to consider? Yeah, so consider your time in Egypt. And he mentioned several events in Egypt that he wants them to meditate on, to think about. And if you think about, this is what God has done for you. Boy, that is, how can I but serve him? And then what about 5 and 6? What else should they consider or think about? Okay, good. And specifically, what time period are we looking at? Time in the wilderness. So he already did this. Moses did this for us, right? As he recounted some of the events in the wilderness, how they were so stubborn, stiff-necked, and their hearts were not circumcised. They were stuck in their ways. So I want you to think about these things and think about all of the lessons that God was teaching you in Egypt when he brought you out with a mighty hand, how he is more powerful than all the gods of Egypt. I tell you, all of the plagues are basically an attack on the gods of Egypt. So, well, we're going to worship the sun god. Well, okay, I'm going to make it dark for 3 days. I'm going to worship, you know, this god or the god of the Nile. Well, I'll turn that to blood. Right? So I am the mighty God. Think about that. Think about how I led you to safety and killed the Egyptian army. Think about all these lessons that I gave you in the wilderness. Meditate, think on those things. In verse 7, what is he really emphasizing, you think, in verse 7? You have no excuse. It's not like someone told you and it wasn't really accurate what they said. No, you saw it. You saw it with your own eyes. You were there. You lived it. So therefore, you need to remember it. Yes, ma'am.
I'm a little bit confused.
Now, okay.
This is Moses at the end of his life, right before he's dying, right?
Right.
So most of the people who were in Egypt have died. These are the ones who were children.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
I just
yes.
wanted to make sure I was right, because they might or might not remember.
That's right.
How old they were.
Sure. Yeah. Good point. I think just kind of as a whole, a lot of you were alive at that point, and the ones that are going to go fight would have probably remembered a lot of these things, especially some of the things in the wilderness. We're not exactly sure when those things might have happened, but yeah, good point. Yes, sir.
In the middle, God gives this spiritual renewal, multiplying, telling them, you are fruitful because of me. So many people went down there, and look at how many came out. And he just showed them, through my might, I brought you out as a fruitful people. But when you went there, look how few you are. And it also serves as a reminder for them, you're going to conquer the nations that are coming before you. They're not mightier than you, smaller than you, yet look what I did for you.
Yes. Yeah, very powerful. Again, just look at how God has blessed you and made you into something from just a tiny, you know, 70-person squad to this mighty, mighty nation. Pretty powerful. Okay, so consider that. That's what he starts with. I want you to consider your past. And I think the same is true for us. We need to consider the lessons that God teaches us in our life. We need to learn from them and love the discipline of the Lord. To the next part, 8 through 17, is keep the commandments and take the good land. So kind of the first part of verse 8, you shall therefore keep the whole commandment that I command you today. And then really the rest of this is going to be motivation to do just that. So we see this kind of theme a lot, right, in Deuteronomy. This is what I want you to do. Here's some motivation to do it. So the first part of verse 8 is I want you to keep the whole commandment. And what motivations do you see in verses, kind of the latter part of verse 8 through 17? What motivations do you see of why they should keep the whole law? Okay, good. So that you will prosper, that you will be successful and possess the land. Latter part of verse 8. What else do you see? You'll live long in the land. Verse 9. That's if you want to have a long life, do what God says. If you want a short life, well, there's also a formula for that as well, right? Don't do what God says. What else is in there? It's a very good land. 10 through 12, not only are you going to get to have this land, it is the cream of the crop, right? This is the best land. It's going to be great for you. It's going to be great for your family. It's going to be great for your cattle. It's just going to be the best land that you'll ever get to enjoy. It's reserved for you. It's yours for the taking. Just obey me. What else do you see?
Would you like it to rain?
13 through 15. Yeah, obey God and I'll send you rain. And all the benefits of rain, right? We were very thankful for the rain today, right? It's been a little while. But crops, grass, I mean, if you want to live, you need water, right? So great motivation. And then finally, verses 16 and 17. Absolutely. Yes. This is a great land. Why? God made it. God made it great. He can also make it a wilderness if he wants to. So you can either have rain and all the benefits of rain, or if you don't obey God, he will withhold the rain and it's going to be terrible. And the result is you are going to perish quickly. So all these motivations. Yes, sir.
Say, have you noticed it's not raining?
Yeah.
Must be a reason.
Yes, Haggai, I think, really points that out well. Absolutely. So it's the idea of if you want me to bless you, I want to bless you. Just do what I say. And what I say is for your good. I think that's such a helpful thing to think about. Okay, then we're getting to familiar territory. Verses 18 through 25, what does it start with? Verse 18, what is that really helping us to see?
Just saying that you need to keep my word before you.
Yeah. Absolutely. It really focuses in on the individual. This is, again, this is what is required of you. And it goes back to chapter 6, right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, that Jesus said is the greatest commandment. So it's repeated here. And then what do we see starting in verse 19 through 21? What is emphasized?
Teach your children.
So you see the development of that? You see why verse 18 is first? Not just number-wise. That'd be weird, right? 19, 21, then verse 18. But the idea of you love the Lord, and then teach your children. Why that order? It's not going to do much good. If to your point, how can you teach if you don't know? If the law is not in you and you don't love it, how are you going to teach it? But go ahead.
It's instinctively part of what you do.
Yes.
You consider a petition. You know, you teach. You put them at the side. It's right there for you to just repetitively have the Lord's word within you.
Absolutely.
Just like memorizing the Bible, God's word.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always before you, and you're always looking for teachable moments. You're always teaching about the law. And it's going to have a greater impact on the kids, right, if they see mom and dad doing it, right? If mom and dad love the Lord and they love to serve God and do everything that they can for Him, and they talk about God all the time, that's just going to feed off onto your kids. And they're going to get that. They're going to get that feel. But kids are also smart enough and aware enough to see if this is just a to-do item, a checklist item. If we just kind of do our Bible study, but then do our own thing, what we really like, enjoy, well, they'll kind of see, well, I know we're supposed to do this, but we don't really love it. So that we need to love the Lord, do what He says, and then that will feed into what we do with our children and helping them love the Lord as well. And it'll have a much greater impact on their life. Does that all make sense? Any thoughts or comments through verse 21, kind of 18 through 21? Certainly a lot there, a lot we could say. Okay, notice verse 22 through 25. Again, more motivation. If you will be careful to do all the commandment that I command you to do, loving the Lord your God, walking in His ways, holding fast, then this is what God's going to do for you, right? These are all the blessings that accompany those things in verse, 22. Be careful, love the Lord, walk in His ways, hold fast to Him. That's a great four-point sermon right there. That's the idea. We just got to love the Lord, hold fast to Him. And then if we do that, God's just going to bless. God's going to bless you. Okay, anything through verse 25? All right. Well, kind of the final section here. Verses 26 through 32 is, I set before you today a blessing and a curse. And we're probably familiar with this section as well. So God basically tells them, how many choices do you have? You have two choices. There's no middle ground. There's no neutral ground. I'm either going to bless you because you're doing what's right, or the opposite, I'll have to punish you for not obeying me. So in these chapters, especially kind of the middle of 10 on through chapter 11, how much motivation has God given us to help us obey Him? And it all stems on the idea of we got to know God. Is that correct English? We have to know God and His character, and see how loving and merciful He is, and we're going to do it. The more we concentrate on who God is And how does Moses describe God? It's not in general terms. God is loving. God is this. He is, but he usually describes God. This is what God has done. And that proves that he is loving. He is merciful, forgiving. So, and that works for us today, right? If you want to know someone, what do you look at? Their actions. How do they act? And how they act reveals their heart. Well, how God acts and treats Israel reveals who he is. And that's how Moses is describing God in these chapters. So looking at this last section here, I set before you two ways, a blessing and a curse. Interesting to me, and I'm sure just amazingly interesting to you, that this is how Moses concludes kind of his speech. If you look at all the way to Deuteronomy chapter 27, and 28, those are the blessings and curses. And then one of my favorite chapters in Deuteronomy is chapter 30. And basically the theme of chapter 30 is choose life. And that's what he's saying here. So my guess is, as we study along, we're just going to keep coming back to chapters 10 and 11, chapter 6, as the foundation to everything else that's going to be said. So I choose you this day, right, as Joshua would say, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. So Joshua's last words, choose correctly. Moses' last words, chapter 30, choose life. You have two options. You either have the blessings or the curses. And so he ends with what he says just again and again in verse 32. You shall be careful to do all the statutes and the rules that I am setting before you today. Thoughts or comments through chapter 11? Yes, sir.
I find it interesting that how many times he says that, and then in the New Testament when Jesus is asked the question, what is the greatest commandment in the law? And it's, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And this is the first and great commandment.
Right.
So if we don't have that, just like in the Old Testament, we don't have anything.
Absolutely. That is the foundation to all the other laws, right? If we truly love the Lord with all our heart, soul, strength, and mind, what are we going to do? We're going to do it. We're going to obey him. We're going to be careful to obey. What's the value of
circumcision? It's nothing if you don't love the Lord. What's the value in anything else? It's nothing if you don't love the Lord and keep his commandments.
Right. It all deals with the heart, not the physical act. Yes, sir.
Things that they don't have a relationship with idols, and neither do the idols have a relationship with them. Whereas with God, there is a relationship.
Yeah, good. I think one of the temptations for Israel is when they go into the land of the Moabites, they would see, well, the god of this territory is this, or Philistia, it's Dagon, right? And so if you want blessings in this territory, you have to pray to this god. Well, God's saying, no, I'm the God of all gods. If you want blessings, you worship me. Sir, put me first. So that's a temptation for them, and they're, of course, going to fall to that temptation. We need to always put God first, love him first. Any final thoughts or comments? All right. Well, thank you for a good class. And please read ahead of time chapters 12 through 14. So I gave Jacob a monumental task to cover those three chapters next week. So please read beforehand and study up. So that'll help us. Thank you.